Actually, the weather's not too miserable.
The weather is not miserable. It is us who is on fire today. There's a special something going on today, which is why we had to take a break from our break and bring you this podcast.
Also, I think it indicates the importance of taking a break. It's been a long time since I have felt hot, hot, hot to record a podcast episode.
Indeed. Who knew that just a little bit of time away would make us feel like
this? We did. We knew. That's why we took a break. So if this is any indication, we might be popping in every couple weeks to...
Who knows? Maybe we're just like, oh, we just got to talk about that.
Yeah. You know, they say consistency, consistency, but... I kind of wonder, what would it look like? Well, this is a conversation for later. If we just recorded when we wanted to.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about how creativity, like, you can't really force it. There's different stages of it. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you need that break in order to, you know, get different inspiration so you can come back fresh and new.
Yeah. Especially because it is a passion project for us. It's not how we make money. We don't, we make $0 off the podcast. So anyway, we're back for at least... Right now.
For today. Mm-hmm. Just for today.
All right. You want to jump in?
Let's do it.
I think that was a longer pause than I needed. This is Be Createful, a podcast about finding fullness through creativity. I'm Joe.
And I'm Madison. And on episode 118, we are talking about... being alone together, social media, and us.
Ooh, that was interesting. We have another episode called You're Not Alone in Your Loneliness. Mm-hmm. Is that what it's called?
Yes.
Which this will be a different slant, though, for sure.
Indeed.
Okay, the reason we are having this very special episode is because... yesterday. Oh, my gosh. Sorry. There's a car driving by with a black trash bag on their trunk. I don't think they meant to leave it there, or they're just going a short distance. And we're like, if I go real slow, this will be fine.
I don't know.
Okay. Yesterday, the Surgeon General put out an advisory about the effects of social media on youth mental health. I will link that advisory in the show notes if you want to read it directly. But I started to share some of the points with Madison, and I was like, and I was going to send out an email to our email list, kind of talking about it. And then I thought, I think we're going to have a lot to say. We should have a podcast. Because I was yelling across my office to Madison's office and reading her parts of the survey.
And then I had to come in and talk. And I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. This is a podcast.
Yeah. So I think what I'll do, I have gone through and read it. You have not.
Nope.
So I'm just going to read the parts that stuck out to me. And then we'll see how it goes. Because I feel like it might be a tangent-y episode.
Yes.
And so we can either kind of like stop and talk about stuff as it hits, or we, you know, can
meander
go all the way through.
Our way.
Yeah. So we'll just see what fits best.
Alrighty.
95% of youth between the ages of 13 and 17 report using a social media platform.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Except I wonder how many percent of parents of those youth.
No.
Yeah.
If you've interacted with any teenagers, you know that they will have fake social media accounts.
Yes. Yeah. And I think parents probably know that. I mean, I'm not going to throw any of our teens under the bus. So
our teens are great.
May or may not be true of our teens, but, so 95% of kids between 13 and 17 are on social media. More than a third of those say they use social media almost constantly. 13 is the minimum required age that most social media platforms have.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are still nearly 40% of children between 8 and 12 use social media.
Oh my goodness.
Now, what was unclear to me is what they count, what they are including under that umbrella term of social media. So obviously, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok,
Twitter.
I don't know that youth are on Twitter really,
not
but
anymore.
They could be. But then I also think that things like Be Real,
yes,
Marco Polo.
I think YouTube would also count.
Yeah, but a lot of kids are on YouTube.
Yes, but I'm talking, I guess I'm more specifically thinking about kiddos who make content on YouTube or maybe are a part of content on YouTube. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of young kiddos who have older people or adults helping them make content for YouTube.
Yeah. And YouTube, I mean, it's been around for so long. I know it is a social platform, and especially because they have now the YouTube shorts and stuff that are more like TikToks, but it does feel in a different category to me. Anyway, but yes, it probably would include YouTube, Reddit.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
And there's all sorts of like chat sites and various forums and things that people can get on that are kind of more niche and things like that, that are similar to Reddit.
They did lay out at the beginning, they acknowledge that there's complex factors that are going to impact the effect that it has, right? So the amount of time that youth are spending on platforms, the type of content they consume or are exposed to. So if you're talking about a kid on YouTube that's just watching other kids on YouTube or like content that's made for them, that's a lot different than content that is not made for them.
Exactly.
So the type of content they consume, the activities and interactions that they get from social media, and the degree to which it disrupts normal activities like sleep, physical activity, in-person
interactions. Yeah.
Okay. So apart from those factors, it also acknowledges that different kids are going to be affected in different ways based on, you know, their individual personality, their vulnerabilities, their cultural, historical, economic factors. All of that plays into it. So no,
that makes sense because all of us are made different. What could be problematic for one person may not be problematic for another.
Right. But the number of studies that they cite is like astronomical. So there is a lot of work that has been done. But I think what's scary about it is it's still so new. This is the first generation really, right, that we're seeing go through it. So, okay, the reason it's important and the reason that this is focusing on youth and mental health is that between the ages of 10 and 19, that's when you're starting to undergo a highly sensitive period of your brain development. It's also when risk-taking behaviors are at their peak. So that's why we see teens doing really dumb things. Your well-being is fluctuating a lot, you know, based on your experiences. And mental health challenges like depression and anxiety, this is the age where those typically start to emerge.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in early adolescence, so you'd be talking like 13 to 15 probably, that is when you're starting to see kids form their own sense of identity. Their sense of self-worth is forming. And so because that combined with the brain development, it makes teenagers especially susceptible to social pressures, peer opinions, peer pressure, comparison, and all of that.
Because ultimately, everybody wants to fit in. They want to feel like they belong somewhere.
Right. I mean, we were just talking, was it yesterday, about getting older and how nice it is?
Yes. Like I was explaining that I just turned 29 and how there's a lot of jokes, especially for women, that, oh, I'm forever 29. But I certainly do not want to go back to the emotional self that I was at 22 because I'm just more sure of myself. I know more about my self-worth. I've done a lot of work on myself to get here. And I don't know if you could pay me enough money to go back and have to relearn all of that.
No,
stuff.
I wouldn't even go back to 29. I told Madison that maybe I would want my perpetual age to be like 44.
Yeah. Like, but your body and your mind are like kind of like right there.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know yet because I'm 39, but I don't want to stay here. I'm excited to turn 40.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason why is back to what that was just saying. I don't feel as susceptible to comparison or peer pressure or opinions of other people.
Exactly.
Okay, so frequent social media use may be associated with distinct changes in the developing brain. So it says that it could potentially impact the amygdala, which that part of our brain is important for emotional learning and behavior. And it could impact the prefrontal cortex, which is important for impulse control, emotional regulation, and moderating social behavior. So those are things we already see teenagers struggling with, right? And then now they have access to all of the social media. And if it is like altering the way that their brain is developing, that's really scary.
So what's unique about human brains is that when we are kids, we don't have, like if you're looking at brain cells, I'm going to get kind of in the weeds here, bear with me. Each of your brain cells, when they make new connections, that's how learning happens. Like literally you are making connections in your brain. Mm-hmm. However, kids often have to have a lot of repetition because those connections need to be made over and over again in order to kind of like retread those pathways. Imagine your mind is like building a highway system, okay? And as you are growing older, your brain actually becomes less elastic. So it starts in the back of your brain that this fatty, like almost like if you imagine like a wire or a cord, there is a fatty sheath that is covering those connections. It's called a myelin sheath, and it starts at the back of your head or back of your brain, and it slowly moves forward. So that's why we, you know, it's important to get kids in school when they do, because they're making all these connections. Mm-hmm. And so as that myelin sheath is making its way towards the front of your brain, it's encasing those connections and making them quicker. Now, it doesn't make them as elastic, so it's harder to learn new things, as adults will tell you. Sometimes it's harder for adults to learn new things than kids, but the last place to get hit by that myelin sheath is that prefrontal cortex, where all of your decisions and like future making abilities happen. And so it's still quite flexible as a teenager, and it often doesn't get covered until we're talking young adulthood, like into 25. Your 20s.
Yeah. So when, because you hear people say your brain isn't fully developed,
that's
until
what
you're
they
25
mean.
So they're talking about the, what's it called? The myelin?
The myelin sheath.
Has not reached the front of your head until you're 25.
Yes. On average, some people may take longer.
Yeah. And it takes longer in boys than girls, right?
Indeed, it does.
Well, that's why, you know, it's easier for kids to learn a second language, mm-hmm. all of that, because their brains are like,
they're very
ripe
malleable
for the learning.
Yeah. And it's supposed to be that way. So bringing it back to here, like it makes sense that it's affecting the actual development of the brain, because that's what's supposed to be happening. It's supposed to be very malleable. It's supposed to be able to learn and adapt to new things.
Yeah.
But we as human beings, we're not adapted to social media.
Yeah.
It's taken us, you know, thousands of years to get to where we are now. And we're still dealing with, you know, poor circadian rhythm. Like we're going to bed way after the sun goes down, even though our bodies are like naturally formed to like go to bed when the sun goes down.
Well, technology, any kind of technology, yes, disrupts, it makes us less and less natural, mm-hmm. right? Or like, I mean, in tuned with the natural world or the natural order of things. So,
and that's not to say that the natural order is always good or that natural is always better, but it's something we need to recognize when we're talking about how our biology is being affected.
So having electricity and being able to have lights on in your house after it was dark started to have an impact on all of this. So that is nothing new. Okay. All of these changes that are happening in the brain, they're unsure on the impact that is having on teenagers' sensitivity to social reward and punishment.
This also makes me think on a little bit smaller scale about the social reward and punishment, that maybe shame or reputation, things that used to kind of keep, if you want to say keep people in line, or maybe even keep people safe, are maybe not as important anymore so much as getting like internet clout, getting likes, mm-hmm. and shares and things like that. Mm-hmm. Our reward system is changing, and it has a lot less to do with maybe being a responsible or a kind human being and more about being an interesting or a human being that's cool to watch.
Also, it is quantifiable. You can see how many people like Madison's post compared to my post.
Yes.
So now I am able to actually put a number on popularity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, moving on. There are some benefits. So let's do them some
Yeah, service. We're going to try and be fair here.
Yeah. So here are the benefits laid out in this advisory. By the way, this is one paragraph, one page out of, like half a page out of 25 pages talks about the benefits. So some youth talk about having positive community and connection with others who share their identity, ability, and interest. This is especially important in groups that are marginalized, whether that is people of color, people in the LGBTQ plus community, people with disabilities, people who are outside of beauty standards. They're able to find community online and see themselves represented online in ways that they might not see in their...
in whatever town they may live in.
Right, in their direct community. The ability to form and maintain friendships and develop social connections through social media is part of what is driving that as a benefit. Also, it lets kids who may not be exposed to different ideas in their community have some access to that. So if I'm, you know, a white straight girl in a school full of white straight people, then it lets me hear other people's experiences that I might not have access to. Okay, so 7 out of 10 teen girls of color report encountering positive or identity affirming content related to race through social media. And they're not hearing that in person.
Yeah.
A majority of adolescents, so again, we said 95% of adolescents are on social media. A majority of them report that social media helps them feel more accepted. 58% said social media helped them feel more accepted. 67% said that they have people who will support them through tough times. You know, I think they also probably feel like they can be more vulnerable
with people online.
Yeah.
Because let's be real. If you lose a friend who is online, that can be incredibly devastating. There also is a, maybe I shouldn't speak to this because I'm not someone who has had like a true deep friend online. Like, I don't know if you have.
No.
Where it's like, we only hang out online. However, if something does happen, you can kind of just, you know, you never saw that person in person. So maybe it's not as bad if you lose that friend. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, but I meant that I think you can be more vulnerable because you're not actually face to face. So it's easier to like be authentic and vulnerable.
Oh, I was connecting online. That like even if you are vulnerable and they end up rejecting you, that was one person online. You don't. But that's coming from someone who's never truly had like a real online
friend.
When
you said losing them, I thought you meant they died.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I just meant like, you know, people part ways.
Yes, friendships end.
Yeah.
71%, this was interesting to me, 71% creative side.
Hey, mm-hmm. Which I think that's fair. They can show off their work.
Yeah.
They can create their work online.
Yeah.
And get inspiration.
Yeah. And 80% said that social media helped them feel more connected to what was going on in their friends' lives. But again, is it truly what's going on?
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this before, that social media is like the highlights of people's lives.
Yeah.
Or maybe even something that's manufactured.
Yeah. One more benefit is that research suggests that social media, this is talking about mental health interventions that are available through social media or that are digitally based.
Oh.
Mental health interventions may also be helpful for some children and adolescents. They are seeing help-seeking behaviors, and they can serve as a gateway to initiating mental health care.
Mm-hmm.
So that is being modeled. Yes. Online.
Which, hey, I'm all about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They might even get some resources that they may not be able to get because of financial situations or, you know, living too far away.
And the digital-based mental health interventions, I think, would be things like, you know, there's a company called BetterHelp. You can actually do therapy, like,
online.
Yeah. Okay, so those are the benefits. Any that you would want to add?
not necessarily. Because, yeah. I mean, it hits all of, like, you get to share with people. You get to see what's going on.
Yeah.
Maybe you get some affirmation for the things that you're doing. Like, you, like, those likes help you to build some confidence, and so you continue to pursue things.
Yeah, but you know what else that I don't know if kids are really aware of the algorithm? Like, you might create one thing and it gets a lot of likes, and then you create something else and put it out there and it doesn't get any likes. That is not an indicator of if that content was less good or less creative than the first thing. It just means no one saw it.
Yeah.
And so there's so many things that are happening under the surface that are out of the control of the content creator. That's hard for even us to deal with
it
as
is.
Adults putting out content.
I'm someone who's always had their social media private. I don't open it up into the world. And so I don't know, like, this doesn't talk about the difference between a kid who's only friends with people or only sharing with their friends or their family versus someone who has a public, like, social media page.
Right. I would assume. So if we're talking about teens whose parents don't know that they have social media.
Oh, yeah.
They're private.
Probably. Yeah. But if their parents know, or maybe if their parents aren't just savvy, maybe they do have a public one.
Mm-hmm.
Possible, you know.
All right. Let's talk about the harm.
Okay. Everyone settle in. I'm going to hydrate myself for this one.
I will say, like, it's a lot of stuff we already know.
Okay.
A study of U.S. adolescents aged 12 through 15. This was 6,500 people in this study. Adolescents who spent more than 3 hours per day on social media faced double the risk of experiencing poor mental health outcomes, including symptoms of depression and anxiety.
Oh, man. First of all, 3 hours is a lot. In the sense that, like, that's a lot of time. But if you've spent time on social media, you know that you could spend way more.
Especially if we're including YouTube, you know, things like that in social media.
Yeah. Wow. You said double?
Yeah.
Frick.
3 hours a day doubles the risk of experiencing things like depression and anxiety.
Why do you think that is?
It's everything that we'll talk about, right? It is the exposure to comparison, the bullying, if people are seeing, like, violent content.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it puts us, even if you're just going to social media, like, for curated news, it still is a place that exists to keep people on the platform. So it's going to show you things that are going to keep you there.
That's going to keep you engaged.
Yeah, and things that make you mad are more likely. People engage more with things that make them mad than things that make them happy or that they agree with.
Indeed. That is very true.
What was that Netflix documentary? Oh, gosh, I can't remember the name of it.
Hmm.
It's about the Social Network. Maybe that's what it's called. Or is that the movie?
I think that's the movie.
Okay, well, I will look it up and I'll put it in the show notes, and probably people are screaming at the wherever it is you're listening to podcasts with the name of it. But it goes into all of this stuff too. So, okay, this was very interesting because this would be my time. So, wait. Okay, we're not there yet.
All right, back it up.
All right, back up. As of 2021, 8th and 10th graders. So I guess they just studied, like, those two grades. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's weird. 8th and 10th graders spent an average of 3.5 hours per day on social media.
Mm-hmm.
So it only takes the 3 hours a day to double your chances.
Yep.
And they are already over it on average. 1 in 4, so 25% of 8th and 10th graders spent 5 or more hours a day. And 1 in 7, so what is that, 12%, spent over 7 hours. 7 hours. That's a full-time job on social media.
Yes, it is. I'm thinking, like, does Pinterest count as social media? And I think it does. But there's, like, a whole... See, that's what I'm talking about, is that this, like, social media has a wide range of, like, how you're engaging with it.
Well, I think... I would not consider Pinterest social media because there's not much of a social aspect to Pinterest.
Mm.
Like, no one is commenting on my Pinterest. I don't follow people on Pinterest.
But you can do all of those things.
I know you can. And maybe people are. Mm-hmm. But that's not the way that I use Pinterest. Mm-hmm. It's more like a vision board.
Yes.
Which still, I mean, magazines, we're still doing a lot of these things to self-esteem mm-hmm. and body image and all of that that social media is doing. It's just so. Okay, this is the part I was going to get at too. Okay, in the advisory, they don't mention it. So I went to the study. They don't mention what social media they're talking about. You'll be able to tell what it is though. But I went into the footnotes and went to the original study. Okay, Facebook was rolled out to different colleges mm-hmm. originally, and it didn't come to all colleges at once. So they were able to go back and leverage like the data that was available to see the impact that Facebook had as it rolled across the country.
Oh, that's cool.
The rollout of Facebook was associated with an increase in depression, 9% over a baseline increase in depression, and anxiety, 12% over baseline in anxiety among college-age students. And this is studying 360,000 participants.
Wow.
Like that it rolled out to in college. The study's co-author also noted that when applied across the entire U.S. college population, the introduction of Facebook may have contributed to more than 300,000 new cases of depression.
Oh, boy.
Wow. So when I went to the study, this is what the abstract said. It actually named it as Facebook. We find that the rollout of Facebook at a college had a negative impact on student mental health. It increased the likelihood with which students reported experiencing impairments of academic performance because of their mental health. And additional evidence suggests that results are due to Facebook fostering unfavorable social comparisons. So Facebook rolled out in 2006. Mm. Well, no, 2005. Fall of 2005 was when I got Facebook. However, I had already graduated. Mm. So I didn't see, I'm just older than this. I didn't engage with it as a student on campus, but at that time you had to have a university email address to sign up for Facebook.
Yes.
So wow. Isn't that fascinating?
That is wild. So you said like 300,000 like new cases of depression that it has contributed to.
Yeah. Well, that it could contribute to.
Because we're not saying that like those people wouldn't have had depression otherwise.
Well, but they are basing it off of like they're starting with the baseline. Mm-hmm. So they can see what were the average, you know,
what would have been the typical
cases before and then what was it now?
Wow.
Yeah. It's pretty incredible. Pretty incredible. Okay. Another study. A small randomized trial in college-aged youth found that limiting social media use to only 30 minutes a day over 3 weeks led to significant improvements in depression severity. This was especially helpful for people who had a high depression already. Mm. They saw an improvement in their depression score by 35%.
Wow. Well, I can definitely speak to that because as I've been struggling with my own depression and anxiety, I have tried to limit my use on Facebook mm-hmm. and other platforms that are inherently more social media. So I spend a lot of time like on Pinterest or on YouTube learning how to do things or just listening to interesting conversations. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely helpful to not constantly be scrolling. And I'll catch myself sometimes where I get on Facebook and I scroll for a bit and I'm like, oh, whoa, hey.
Yeah.
You've been doing this for a hot second.
Because it gets mindless.
It does. Well, and then you have ads too, and I get stuck on like all these curated ads.
Yes, and now ads will show up even if you're in someone's feed. Like on Instagram, mm-hmm. if someone clicks to make do and is scrolling through make do's post, ads will show up on our feed.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Like, even that too, I know they haven't talked about that, like ads on social media, but I'm sure that also plays a part because ads are trying to get you to buy something and is selling you a story.
Yeah.
And they are trying to make that deficit within you of you need this in order to live a better life, to be more attractive, to do, you know, to be cool. And so that maybe the ads do also play a role in that.
Yeah. And you know what's wild is, like I've thought about, well, do we need to use like social media ads to let people know about like upcoming classes? Like there's all kinds of ad campaigns that Make Do could run to let people know you can come buy fabric here or, hey, sign up for our email or whatever, like as a way for people to figure out who we are. But, okay, this ad's just a whole nother level of mind blowingness.
Oh boy.
Another randomized trial among young adults and adults. So we've moved out of youth at this stage, found that deactivating social media for 4 weeks improved the subjective well-being. So how they are feeling about their happiness, their life satisfaction, their depression, anxiety, etc. It improved it by about 25% to 40%.
40%
of psychological interventions like self-help therapy, group training, and individual therapy.
Wow.
So it had like almost half, well, in some people, up to 40% of what you would get from therapy, you could get just from deleting your social media.
Or staying off of it for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Like it was saying. Wow. That's really incredible. And talk about something that doesn't cost you anything that could benefit you.
Yeah. I know. Okay, so these studies point to a higher concern in the harm of social media for girls, adolescent girls, and those who are already experiencing poor mental health. I don't think that is a surprise.
Mm-mm.
Particular outcomes are things like cyberbullying, depression that's related to cyberbullying, body image, disordered eating behaviors, poor sleep.
Mm-hmm.
A study conducted among 14-year-olds, so almost 11,000 14-year-olds, found that greater social media use predicted poor sleep, online harassment, poor body image, low self-esteem, and higher depressive symptom scores. And it was more among girls than boys.
It's like those teen magazines on steroids.
Yeah.
Because it's curated to you. It's your personal friends saying this about you, not some stranger.
Well, it depends on who you follow, though, because sometimes they're following Kim Kardashian or whatever.
They're so then you add on the added celebrities who have, you know, tons of disposable income to look and, you know, have their photos touched and all of that retouched.
Mm-hmm. A majority of parents say that they are somewhat, very, or extremely worried about the use of social media for their kids.
Hey, good on you parents for looking out for this.
But so then it breaks it down like the percentage of parents, like what they were concerned about. The thing that parents were most concerned about was exposure to explicit content. 71% of parents said that.
Not safe for work content, things like that.
Right. And then it is around the 50% of parents that are worried about all the things we've been talking about. Mm. So it's like for a lot of parents, it's not even they're not even thinking about the impact that this is having on their kids' mental health. They're only thinking about the exposure to the explicit content.
Yeah.
I know.
I mean, you don't want to give parents another thing to worry about, but it is true that there's can be an unhealthy interaction that happens on social media. And specifically for me, what was a pitfall was parasocial relationships. Did you see that mentioned in the
study? No, they didn't talk about that at all.
But if you're following influencers, not even just celebrities, but people who are interacting through like reels or other sorts of like, you know, live media or streaming on Twitch or whatever, you can get attached to those people, form these like deep attachments where you get nothing back.
Yeah.
And it takes the place of real relationships. Uh-huh. So you're like, oh, I'm not lonely. I kind of like, I get this feeling from this person who doesn't even know who you are.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, it is kind of different. But I think people who like to read, you kind of feel like the book you're reading, those characters are like your friends. And then yes. the book is over and it's so sad. Or TV shows, like you feel really connected to the characters and then it's over and you feel like you're losing a friend. But what's different about on social media is that that person is like ongoing and it can be.
It's ongoing. They can look you, quote, straight in the eye yeah. to the camera. They're intending to make their content like they are talking to a friend. And that's not inherently, I don't want to say that that's like predatory or bad.
Well, no, because podcasts are parasocial relationships.
Exactly. And I have used those parasocial relationships to help ease my loneliness at times. However, it becomes a problem like what we're talking about here, where you're overusing it for more than 3 hours a day when you are getting more out of the parasocial relationship rather than getting that in-person experience. It's like anything else. Sure, you make like Diet Coke, but if you're drinking it every day instead of water, that's an addictive habit that
what
needs to
go. What if you're drinking it every day and water?
Hey, I won't speak to that. I'm just saying, if you can't, like if you are skipping out on things that you need to be doing for the sake of your addiction, like that's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways.
Okay. So extreme, inappropriate, and harmful content is easily and widely accessible through social media.
Absolutely.
This is coming through direct pushes. Someone sends someone directly that content.
Hey, have you seen this really disturbing video?
Yeah. It could be unwanted content exchanges.
Yes.
And also just the way that the algorithm is designed.
Because again, that, you know, stuff that makes you mad or shocked is mm-hmm. going to get more engagement. Mm-hmm. I had to talk to Richard about this because there for a while, there was a lot of videos being shared about shootings or, you know, police mm-hmm. officers stopping and shooting someone. And I remember people sharing those videos and they wouldn't warn people mm-hmm. and they wouldn't, sometimes they would blur some things, but not all of it. Or the news, even if you're just watching TV, they would just throw it up on the screen without a warning. Mm-hmm. And you can get secondhand trauma mm-hmm. from seeing that. And I think either we've mentioned it before, or we will get to it, talking about becoming numb to those things. But also there's the problem with constantly seeing hurt and pain within this world. Mm-hmm. Long before we had media that we could just telegraph across the world through satellites, you only knew what was going on in your neighboring community. Yeah. We as humans cannot handle the magnitude of the world's sorrow and pain all at once. If you drown yourself in it, you will become angry and bitter.
Not to mention, who's watching the news? Adults. Like, I wasn't...
Sure.
As a kid, I wasn't exposed to the effect of global tragedy. Really. Yes. Not really. Mm-hmm. And so now with social media, and to bring it back to the youth, they are being exposed to those kind of things at a much younger age mm-hmm. than I ever was. Plus, it's constant. I'm not sure that the 24-hour news cycle was a thing when I was like in high school, like younger.
I'll tell you what, though, like 9/11 definitely changed a lot of things. And I,
yeah, but I was a freshman in college.
You were, yes. But I was a kid in school, and yeah. that could be, now that is a great. That was a great, great tragedy that happened. So yes, young people were going to be affected. But if you can imagine that kids are seeing tragedies similar to that all around the world, if they want it or if they don't want it, mm-hmm. constantly being exposed to that, that can't be good for you.
Well, no. So this goes on to say that in certain tragic cases, it says, all of this can lead to childhood deaths. So, suicide, self-harm mm-hmm. related deaths, risk-taking challenges on social media, like, hey, eat this Tide Pod. Mm-hmm. And those, it's especially risky for children and teens who are already experiencing mental health difficulties.
For sure.
So, you know, we talked earlier about social media providing a sense of community for some people, but this is just highlighting that sense of community is very much outweighed by the harm. mm-hmm. that it poses.
It's like a wonky community if you think about it, that if these kids are being, you know, they're diving into the internet, you have now become part of the global community at a time when your brain is not really capable of handling a lot of these immensely complex and tragic issues. And at the same time, people are opening themselves up and being vulnerable. And it's just like this perfect storm of, you know, the potential for getting hurt.
Well, you also can find on social media content that is normalizing behaviors like self-harm and suicide, and is even like showing you how to do it.
And it could also be normalizing abusive behavior. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because during this time, let's be real, teenagers are interested in each other and building romantic relationships between each other. And so you're going to get lots of examples of people glamorizing or fetishizing these abusive behaviors with each other.
Yeah. All right. This is more of kind of what we already talked about. It just dives into it a little deeper. So talking about social media and the impact on body image, eating disorders, and social comparison. Mm-hmm. When asked about the impact of social media on their body image, 40% of adolescents between 13 and 17 said it made them feel worse. So almost half. 40% said they were indifferent, and 14% said it made them feel better.
I mean, there are some content creators out there that are trying to be body neutral, inclusive.
It depends on who you follow. Mm-hmm. And so if kids have some sort of discernment in who they're following, then I can see how it
would help them.
Yeah. But you're still only 14% is it having positive impact on. Mm-hmm. 64%, so almost 2/3 of adolescents are exposed to hate-based content. Girls of color, 1/3 have reported exposure to racist content at least monthly.
Oh, I'm not surprised by that.
In a review of 36 different studies, there was a consistent relationship between cyberbullying via social media and depression among children, adolescents, mm-hmm. Women, and sexual minorities. So like trans kids, non-binary kids, were more likely to experience incidents of cyberbullying. Mm-hmm. 75% say that social media sites are only doing a fair to poor job of addressing online harassment and cyberbullying.
For sure.
Social media platforms can be sites for predatory behavior and interactions with malicious actors who are targeting kids. So things like catfishing and stuff and mm-hmm. adolescents. Nearly 6 in 10, so 60% of adolescent girls say they have been contacted by a stranger on social media platforms in ways that make them feel uncomfortable.
Ooh, man, I have a couple of incidents mm-hmm. that has happened to me. Actually, one recently where I had a guy offer to be my sugar daddy.
Oh, yeah.
And for women, at this point, it's almost like a joke.
Yeah.
Like it's a rite of passage. Like, oh yeah, you got unsolicited pictures. You got someone who's asking you for inappropriate things. Oh yeah, welcome to the club.
Yeah.
It's just part of it. And it makes me really sad.
Yeah.
And if you're not prepared for that, or if you're in a place where you feel really poorly about yourself and someone is showing interest in you, I mean, you'll take anything. You'll take any sort of attention.
Well, so you don't realize that, like, that person that reached out to you, they sent that message
to
10,000 accounts.
Yes.
Like, you know, it's a bot.
Yeah.
It's not even a real person, but
they're trying to get something out of you.
Yeah.
And sometimes, and hey, you know, let's speak to the other side of this as well. Men are often exploited for their loneliness. And young men are exploited for their loneliness as well.
This was kind of in the documentary, but I saw something else on it too. White supremacist groups are targeting young men, mm-hmm. young boys and teens through social media.
Yeah.
And there's like these fight clubs that they arrange mm-hmm. and then that's kind of what gets them into feeling like they have community. So they eventually take the relationship offline and mm-hmm. bring them to in person. And then that's where they're basically recruiting neo-Nazis and stuff. It's scary. Oh,
lovely.
Yeah. Okay, we're almost done.
All right.
Okay, so overusing social media can harm children and adolescents by disrupting healthy behaviors. So we already know that social media is designed to maximize user engagement. We've talked about that. And that has the potential to encourage overuse and the inability to regulate your own behavior, impulse control. Things like push notifications, autoplay.
Oh, yeah.
Infinite scroll, quantifying popularity. So the number of likes that someone's getting mm-hmm. and the algorithm, all of those things are leveraging user data to serve specific content to specific users.
Yes.
And with the intent of maximizing your engagement and keeping you on the platform longer and longer. Nearly a third of social media use is attributed to not being able to control it.
Yeah.
Like a third of the time that you spend on there, you didn't want to spend on there. Yeah. It's just happening. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's why I don't have TikTok.
Oh, yeah. That's why I haven't gotten TikTok either. But even as adults, that can affect you. How much more is it going to affect a kid who doesn't have impulse control?
Right, because we already talked about their brain and mm-hmm. their amygdala and their prefrontal cortex, and they're completely losing the ability to have self-control.
When you're a kid, if you wanted to eat candy for dinner and you had the option to, you would.
Right. I remember telling my mom that when I was a mom, I'm going to let my kids eat ice cream whenever they want.
Yeah. Which, of course, when you're an adult, you're like, oh, yeah, I've got some impulse control. I shouldn't do that anymore.
Yeah.
But kids don't have that.
Mm-mm. Small studies, so it doesn't quantify that, have shown that people with frequent and problematic social media use can experience changes in their brain structure similar to changes in individuals with substance use or gambling addiction.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me at mm-hmm. all, because that dopamine that gets mm-hmm. released every time you get a like or whenever you see something like that, it's especially because you can just like click open a button and it gives it to you.
Yeah. A third of teens say they feel addicted to social media. Over half of teenagers report that it would be hard to give up social media.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm in that group too.
Yeah. In addition, we already talked about that. That survey of 8th and 10th graders how long that they were spending. So with this uncontrollable use, it's showing the link that has with problems sleeping. And I was like, oh, yeah, it makes it hard to sleep. But here's why it's important. 42 studies have been done on this that this analysis looks at, that the relationship between social media and poor sleep quality, reduction of sleep duration, sleep difficulties, and depression. Poor sleep has been linked to altered neurological development in adolescent brains. Mm-hmm. So not only is the behavior impacting the way that their brain is forming, the lack of sleep
is also not helpful.
Having an effect.
It's like a double-edged sword. Yeah.
So it is affecting neurological development, depressive symptoms, and suicidal thoughts and behaviors. On a typical weekday, nearly a third of adolescents report using screen media until midnight or later.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that.
So this says screen media encompasses various digital activities. However, social media is the most common mm-hmm. of those things. So, like, I mean, we know our teens aren't getting a lot of sleep.
Yeah. I mean, tis be the nature of teenagers these days,
yeah.
But it is then further compounded by the fact of all of these things that they're experiencing on social media.
And then, like, it makes it hard. You've been staring at your screen, so then you can't go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first time I stayed up all night.
Oh, yeah.
I was in, like, fourth grade or something, and I was reading. I stayed up reading a book with a flashlight under my covers. I know.
Yeah, but, you know, like, it's especially hard to go to sleep if you see something upsetting, which they're more likely to see because of the algorithm.
Yeah. And then finally, it has looked at the link of social media use with self-reported and diagnosed ADHD.
Mm.
So it's like I didn't highlight much of this because it's still kind of like we don't really know.
Yeah.
But they studied over 2 years. They looked at the number of kids within the group that had ADD at the beginning, ADHD at the beginning, and then it was statistically significant that they had an increase in 2 years of ADHD. But it's not enough to really like...
Okay. So like put that on your radar.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. Yeah. It's the same of letting kids watch like TV shows that are made for kids that move so fast.
Yes.
And that all of that is impacting kids' ability to learn at such a young age. Mm-hmm. What did I just hear? 15 seconds is our attention span now. 15 seconds.
Whew, sounds like a goldfish.
Yeah. Well, that's memory, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But that's even among adults. So it's even more so with kids. We just can't. And I feel that in myself, like I'm watching TV and then I'm also like playing a game on my phone. Mm-hmm. And so if I start to do that, then I have to choose. You can either play the game or you can watch this thing. You
can't do both.
Yeah.
I feel that too.
Yeah. Okay. So that gets us through the study. Well, it did go into some known evidence gaps that we don't know. It also covers, like what people can do. So because the Surgeon General put this out, like they're calling for lawmakers to do something about this.
Maybe put some limitations depending
on
age.
So it talks about like what policymakers can do. There's a section on what parents can do. So if you are a parent and you are listening, it gives you some ideas, what technology companies can do regardless of what the policies are. And that sort of thing. I want to spend some time. I know we've been going for a while.
Yeah.
But I want to spend some time talking about what we do.
How we fit into all of this equation. Because we interact with kids and teenagers. So.
And we see some of the effects of this. Madison had mentioned before that, like, with the younger kids that she works with, they still want to talk to her. They still don't quite like talk to each other. But I see that even among the teens, like that I feel like they're just now learning how to have conversation with each other. If someone is talking to me, someone else will just start talking to me, like just interrupt. And you said it's like they're just texting, like in a text conversation, you just say what you want and it pops up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's noticeable. And I can see them like kind of learning how to have a conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely tough to be in community with teenagers and even more so now because they don't have like the typical conversation skills that we have. There was another article I read, I believe it's called High School Never Ends. And one of the things that they listed was that, before like teen culture became a thing, like we're talking in the 40s, most teenagers interacted with mainly adults. So like 60% of their time was spent with adults. 40% was spent with like their cohort, the kids their age. But now that has flipped and become even more heavy where kids are spending a majority of time with each other. And if they all have no idea what they're doing and they're all on social media and they're all experiencing these things at the same time, they're not getting the benefit of adult wisdom or learning how to become an adult from other adults.
Right.
So it makes it so that it's hard to have a conversation with them sometimes.
Yeah. One thing that I love about Make Do with the teen class is they engage with each other. And I'm just here. And so I will, I don't think they forget that I'm here, but sometimes they will talk about things that I don't know if they would talk about it with another adult. And so it gives...
Especially not a teacher at school or like maybe someone like a Sunday school teacher or something like
that. The nature of like they just have time and they're doing their creative, whatever it is that they're working on. And so conversation just happens because they have a prolonged amount of time together. And so it provides opportunity for me to step in with an adult perspective in ways that aren't happening when they're just hanging out with their friends.
Absolutely. One thing that I thought of while we were talking about this earlier was MakeDo is one of the few places where, like, we don't take up phones. Like, I've got
That we don't have to, we don't make them turn them in or anything.
Yeah. Because for the most part, the kids are engaged.
Yeah.
They're not bought, like, if they're picking up a phone, it's to share a video with someone or to show off a picture. They're living, like, they are practicing creativity and they're also being in community with each other.
Yeah.
So it's almost being like in a screen-free environment.
Yeah.
For however long the class is.
Right. And teen class is 2 hours. So that's 2 hours in their afternoon that they're here. They're not on their phones.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a way to limit.
It's a way to limit and also to benefit them in a
right,
way.
A way to provide them an alternative.
Because it doesn't feel like a limitation to them.
Right.
They're like, oh no, I have to go to make do and I won't be able to look at my phone. They don't feel that way.
Right.
They're here to engage because they. So we can hold their attention. Take that, social media.
Sometimes.
We're really good at that. Yeah, sometimes it's harder than others, but.
And I think that, you know, when they are on, they will look on Pinterest to get, like, ideas for whatever project they're working on, mm-hmm. or something.
Well, and that's us teaching them or showing them that there are ways to use social media that can benefit you. We have resources here that we can guide them to healthier screen time, or we can talk about our own experiences with screen time and how we try to do that in a healthy way.
Right. Right, because we're not saying get off of it, don't do it.
That's unrealistic in this day and age.
You know, it's the same way that people choose to engage with teenagers on sex.
Yes.
And if you only are saying, don't do it, don't do it, well, but they might.
It is really unrealistic. So in addition, like, there's... people have different approaches to this. If you are very concerned about that, you should also go further and give them more information.
Right.
Because they will learn about it in weird and unhealthy ways on social media if you don't talk about
right.
it.
Right. Avoiding the conversation does not accomplish what you think it does.
They will get their answers mm-hmm. from somewhere. Mm-hmm. And in today's day and age, it's not just from their friends who've had experiences. It's from everyone else who's talking about it on social media.
Right. Right. I wanted to read a text that I got from one of our teens.
Oh,
so, ironically, I had posted on social media asking for people to just describe in a couple words, like, what they thought of MakeDo.
Yeah.
And so this teen texted and said that the first word that they thought of was home.
Mm.
And so I said, tell me more about that. And so they said, MakeDo is my safe place to be myself and explore things and share what is really on my mind. I mean, mm-hmm. that's what they're going to social media for too, right? Mm-hmm. To share what's really on their mind. Mm-hmm. I know I will receive encouragement when I need it and advice when I ask for it. I also know that no matter what is happening outside, I can come to MakeDo and have fun. It's hard for me to finish this mm-hmm. and feel accepted and appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
Those things to me describe a home. That's what they don't get on social media. Like, that's not a home mm-hmm. and it's not safe.
Mm-mm.
And even if you are experiencing some of those things, a measure of acceptance, a measure of,
encouragement,
being able to say what you think.
Yeah.
It's not reciprocal. It will never be. Mm-mm. To the extent that true community is able to provide. So I just like that their statement in comparison with all of the things that we just laid out in that article stands in strict contrast.
Yes.
And it's not MakeDo instead of social media.
It is the things that MakeDo stands for,
mm-hmm.
the community and the creativity. So we have a lot of listeners that don't necessarily live here in Searcy. They don't have a MakeDo.
Mm-hmm.
The ways that you can bring the MakeDo essence to your community, to your kids, is finding ways to engage with them that allows them to learn something new, that finding a place for them where they can just be themselves and be accepted, which I know is going to be really tough because there's not a lot of places like that in the world. But it's my hope that places like this become more common.
Yeah.
That there are places where young people get to feel like they can be accepted in person by people in their own community.
And for who they really are. Mm-hmm. So we have stickers on our door that say all are welcome. Mm-hmm. And those stickers have created some contention in our community, primarily from people who wish we would just keep what we think about certain things to ourselves. And that is the antithesis of make do. Like, it's not a statement on anything other than everyone is welcome here. Like, you are welcome to be who you are when you come here. And this is a safe place for you to be yourself in however you want to show up.
So there was a person who I was having a conversation with about this, and I love what they had to say about it. When they were explaining why they came here, because some friends were like, they weren't too sure about make do.
Yeah.
They said, you know, I'm not too sure about all of this business anyway, but I know what it's not. And I know it's not a shut door,
right?
We need to open doors. And that's how I view make do these days. It is a open door for anyone who wants to come in and be in community. You show up as you are. We don't have any requirements from you other than showing up as you.
And being kind to the other people that are here.
That is also a requirement. We require you to be kind. You do not have to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. Because quite frankly, some of the teens that came in when they first came in, it is uncomfortable to be around them.
Also, those teens were uncomfortable.
They were uncomfortable.
Yeah.
We do not expect you to feel like you can kick off your shoes and let it all hang out in the sense of like, you may not feel immediately at home.
Right. Right. Because it takes time to feel like a place is actually safe.
Because if you're going into a place and you're like, oh, I just feel at home, it's probably catered to people who are like you.
Right.
We are not a place that is catered to a singular person. Mm-mm. We are a place for people.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of people.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I love about this place.
Yeah. And I feel like these comments that we get from our teens and other people, to me, let me know we're on the right track with that. And we have participants in the full range of the spectrum, any spectrum.
Yes.
We have participants that are super conservative, and we have participants that are super progressive, and we have everyone in between. Mm-hmm. We have participants who stay at home with their kids, and we have participants who work outside the home. Like, mm-hmm. Anything that you could find reasons for polarization, we have people on both sides of those poles.
And that's how we like it.
Yes, because that's where we will never be able to see outside of our own perspective if we only surround ourselves with people who think like us.
Which, if you know anything about algorithms and things, it's going to keep showing you things that either you really, really like and you agree with, or it's occasionally going to throw in something that you don't like.
Yes, and so nothing is modeling engagement.
Like a
conversation.
Balanced, yes, exactly. What that requires is in-person activity. Mm-hmm. And we are providing a space for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't happen to have a make do in your area, finding a community space and making it more of an open door,
mm-hmm.
where people are welcome, that's going to be important. That's how you can carry on this mission.
Yeah. And sticking it out in places where you feel uncomfortable at first.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you go somewhere and you feel like, I'm not sure I belong here, but if people are being friendly to you,
mm-hmm.
then stick it out and see what happens. Like, yeah, it might be uncomfortable at first, But uncomfortable is not the same as unwelcome.
Or unsafe.
Right.
Yeah. Agreed.
Right.
So, any last thoughts?
Yeah, I had been, this happens occasionally where I start to think, oh my gosh, the work we do is not that important in comparison with work other nonprofits are doing. Like, you know, we're not feeding people or giving them housing or meeting basic needs. Mm-hmm. And in light of looking at this article that we just went through and other things, I think, wait a minute. The basic need that we're providing is community and connection. Mm-hmm. And that happens through creativity.
Yes.
And I know that when people talk about make do, the creativity is like the first thing that they
yes.
talk about. And mm-hmm. sometimes like kind of all they talk about. But I say that creativity is just the hook that yeah. we use to get people here. Because really our mission and what we are offering is connection.
Yeah. If what you take away from make do is just learning a skill, we haven't done our job quite right.
Right. Right. Now, sometimes if you only come to one class, that might be the majority of what you walk away from. It takes like some recurring
community
exposure.
Does take time. Mm-hmm. It's the same way with social media, though. Mm-hmm. One hit isn't going to get you hooked.
Right.
You have to keep coming back again and again and again.
And if we can get you addicted to something like hand embroidery,
hey,
you can't be scrolling your Instagram.
No, you can't. You need both hands for that.
Hand embroidery. Yeah.
I love it.
So how long have we been going? 117.
112.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I have a suite.
Yes.
I got my hair cut.
Because it's hot, isn't it?
Yep. I cut it last week, but it's still a suite for this week.
Hey, still feeling good. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a suite?
I do. I'm planning another costume.
What is it?
I worked on some armor a long time ago. I'm working on a Star Wars character.
Okay.
So this is my first Star Wars
character. What is character. This for?
My friends have been working on a Star Wars character costumes. Okay. And so I just want to join in with them. It's not for Halloween, so I'm not going to have to deal with
it. It is about time for you to start thinking about your Halloween
costume.
It is.
But I've already made a new costume for Anime Con, so I'm just going to wear that for Halloween.
Oh.
So I'm going to be using this time, once I'm done with some other commissions, to just start working, like, being a little bit more free flow in my costuming and, like, not be so, like, time crunched with Halloween and all that business.
Okay. So Halloween, you're going to be your stiletto gun girl?
Yes.
What's her name?
Bayonetta. Yes.
Well, so I was close.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, very close. So that's my suite, is I'm starting that design process, which okay. is always super exciting.
Yeah. My sour is that I might have a destructive mold that lives in my yard.
Oh, no.
But I'm not sure. So it's just like a mediocre sour right now. Like, it's a livable sour.
It's a little tangy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The mole's cute, though.
Yeah.
Like, I saw its little furry butt on that video you showed me. I thought it was cute. It's not cute what it does to your yard.
No.
So,
but I haven't seen it in a couple days, so maybe it has moved on.
Okay.
I don't know. Like, if it wants to come deep in my yard and eat all the grubs, like, deep, that's fine. Yeah. It's just when it comes to the surface, it's going to disrupt the roots of my plants.
Yeah. So, no, just stay underground and feast.
Yeah. Do you have a sour?
And then carry on. Yes. So, I just got back from a trip to see my parents. Mm-hmm. Woo. That could also be my suite. Mm. Loved them. It's great being in Texas. The blue bonnets were still out. Your girl was happy. However, I'm getting ready to leave on another trip, and this one, it takes 2 days to drive up to Maryland. I am not excited about that.
Yeah.
So,
do y'all like listen to audiobooks and stuff in the car?
I do. Richard loves listening to heavy metal, and it gives me a headache in the car. So I have to wear headphones, or he has to wait till I'm asleep to start playing it.
But then you can sleep while he's listening to heavy
metal? He listens to it on a lower volume, and by the time I'm asleep, I'm tired enough that I don't hear it.
I'd be like, you have to listen to this through headphones.
I know. But when you're driving, you really shouldn't do that.
I know, you're not supposed to.
So, yeah, I'm not looking forward to that.
That sounds horrible.
I mean, it is. That's why it's my sour.
Yeah. You know, my sisters never liked my music, but I didn't listen to heavy metal. It was like Dave Matthews Band and
OAR. Oh, no, girl, you want to play Dave Matthews Band around me while we're in the car for 7 hours?
My sisters were like, you listen to weird music, and they more liked the same kinds of music. But
oh. Anyway. Well, good for them. You can play Dave Matthews around me. I'm totally here for it. Yeah. What are you learning?
I am learning automations on our Airtable.
And boy, is it going to benefit me.
Yes.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. It's going to send out all of the communication that Madison typically has to do before classes in the summer. And it's a lot. It's like, who's in this class? Then I have to send this email. Then I have to, yeah. So it's going to do all of that.
I'm so ready.
And then I'm just learning how to, I mean, once we unlock automations, the sky is the limit.
Exactly.
So that's what I'm learning. How about you?
Excellent. I'm learning how to run. So upon Joe's recommendation, I went ahead and purchased an app called Couch to 5K.
Oh, you have to purchase it?
So like it gives you 2 weeks free.
Now see, when I did Couch to 5K, there wasn't an app. It was just a program you printed out.
Oh, no. I got the app. And it's great because like it tells you when to run, when to stop, uh-huh. all that business. And it's like on my phone. Well, it you could get lifetime access for like $40, but your girl got it on sale for $15. And I'm like, this
lifetime
is
access?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's nice. $15. Yeah. That's
so
fine.
I was like, $15 for like for it to tell me when to run, when to not, and give me random encouragement. Like, yes,
yeah,
I'm doing it. So I bought it and I'm running with a friend.
I had to apologize to Madison because when she told me that she was going to start running, I was not supportive.
You were like, you need to be careful.
Well, you said you were going to do it in the mornings too, at like 6 o'clock or something. And I was like, are you kidding?
I know.
It's about to get really hot. This is miserable, Madison. This is a poor decision, basically was what I said to her. So I had to apologize later. I'm sorry I was not supportive.
But I do appreciate the advice. I feel way better about having this app. I'm not tiring myself out.
Yeah. I said, if you just go out there and run for 30 minutes, you are going to get shin splints.
Yes. So. Which I'm already feeling it in my legs, but like I'm taking it easy.
Yeah.
Going 3 days a week.
Well, good. I'm proud of you. And again, apologies for not being supportive.
It's okay.
On the front end.
All is good.
Okay. Well, y'all, who knows when we will pop in again for another surprise episode, but in case we don't, we enjoy your summer, but most likely we'll be back for a little surprise visit.
Keep checking your iTunes app or be on the watch for that push notification. Know what I mean?
All right. Well, if you follow us, it should just show up. You don't really have to look for it.
All right.
So bye.
Bye. You can find us at Make Do Create on Instagram, Make Do Cersei on Facebook, or you can just head to our website at makedocreate.org.
That's the best place to sign up for our email list, too, if you want to hear more stories and that sort of thing.
So go now.
Go. If you like our theme music, that is from my dear, dear friend Craig Hudson, and you can listen to him on Spotify. That's Craig Hudson with a T. I listen to his playlist all the time.